I'm Rob Kirkup and this is How Haunted, the paranormal podcast where each episode we explore the horrible history and terrifying ghost stories of one of the scariest places on the planet. Or in this case, an entire county of haunted locations. In episode 76, you join me for the final part of our trilogy of episodes situated in Ireland. And this time we visit a further 10 locations in this wonderfully scary county, with stops along our ghost trail including a fort, a castle, a stone circle, a hotel, a cathedral, and even a petrol station. Let's ask together for the third and final time, just how haunted is County Cork? Listener discretion is advised, as each episode of How Haunted will feature gruesome tales, horrific happenings, bloody murder, and ghosts. So many ghosts. Listen on if you dare. Toilerson Services Centre, Mayfield. You join me as we resume our ghost trail at somewhere you wouldn't usually associate with ghosts. We're at a petrol station that hit the headlines in September of 2019. This was when the owner came in the morning and found things appearing to have been thrown from the shelves during the night. This was when the shop was locked up and closed. He watched the CCTV back and what he saw horrified him. He put the footage online and it was very quickly picked up by the media. The British national newspaper The Daily Mirror reported on it with the headline, "Ghost caught on camera knocking food to the ground at service station." The story read, "The ghostly encounter happened at Toilerson Services Centre in Cork, Ireland, after it closed last Wednesday, September the 11th, according to the Irish Mirror. The baffled owner of the services, which is eerily located between two funeral homes, has released footage of the shocking incident. The CCTV clips show a pack of rice cakes mysteriously flying off a shelf, and a fruit basket falling off the top of a hot food counter. The shop owner released the video in the search for an answer. The video has left thousands of viewers questioning the suspected paranormal activity. Another clip showing the view from behind the counter has also been released. A number of people said that they could see a woman in the new clip, but this has been denied by the owner. Shop owner Tom O'Flynn said he can't get his head around what has happened. He told the radio station 96FM, "I started Wednesday morning and saw biscuits on the ground and thought nothing of it. Then I went around and saw a large fruit bowl on the ground, so we checked the CCTV and it looks as though it was pushed off. I would have been very sceptical with things like this, but I looked at it from all angles and I'm at a loss with it." The link to the video so you can make your own mind up is in the podcast episode description. Glanmire. Glanmire is now a suburb of Cork, but it was originally a village. It was first settled in 1856 following the construction of the Hastings Road, which saw construction begin in 1854. By the time it was complete, there was around 3,000 people settled along the dusty trail, and one of the communities that grew from this was Glanmire. Buildings were quickly established in the village, including a post office in 1858, a school in 1860, and St Margaret's Anglican Church in 1887. And our ghost story here dates from the very early days of Glanmire, following the construction of this church, and the inevitable graveyard that would follow. The locals knew to avoid passing the church after dark, as rumour had spread of a ghostly white woman who had been witnessed lingering by the gate after nightfall. Despite tales of her presence deterring most from traversing the area after dark, one man, unaware of this, strolled past the church in the early hours of the morning, only to come face to face with the dreaded phantom. Mistaking her for a living person, the man politely greeted her, to which the ghost responded, "It is a fine night for the dead, but the living should be in bed." Startled, the man ran all the way home, locking the door behind him. And if the legend holds any truth, he opted to leave that door locked for the rest of his days, refusing to ever venture outside again. Belvelly Castle. Belvelly Castle, a tower house dating back to the 14th or 15th century, stands proudly near the village of Belvelly. It commands a strategic position overlooking the road bridge connecting Fort Eyre Island to Great Island, where the town of Cove is located. Initially constructed by the Anglo-Norman Hodnett family, the castle saw ownership shift to the Della Roche, and de Barry families in the 14th century. However, the Hodnets regained control of their lands through leasing arrangements. Over time, notable figures like Walter Raleigh and Roger Boyle, 1st Earl of Orrery, left their mark on the castle's history. By the 19th century, Belvelly Castle had fallen into disrepair. But during World War II, it gained temporary fame as visitors, mistakenly directed by local coachmen, arrived believing that they were visiting Blarney Castle and its famous Blarney Stone. During the Second World War, the Irish Army occupied and made some alterations to the castle. In the early 21st century, the castle changed hands and received approval for restoration, with plans to convert it into a private residence for the new owners, Anne and Gary Wilson. This transformation was completed in late 2018. The ghost here is that of poor Lady Margaret Hodnett. The Hodnetts being the family that founded the castle all those years ago. The alluring Lady Margaret was renowned for her beauty, and this fueled her vanity. She adorned every wall in the castle with mirrors, so she could constantly admire her appearance. As suitors vied for her affection, one of these, Clon de Courcy, grew impatient with her reluctance to commit, and he resorted to extreme measures, starving her and her family in the hope of swaying her decision. After a year, she finally gave in, but the harrowing ordeal she'd been put through had robbed her of her beauty. With her looks having faded, de Courcy swiftly withdrew his proposal, leaving her with nothing. Legend tells of Lady Margaret's ghost haunting the castle's halls. She's known as the Faceless Lady, because of her lack of reflection. She roams the corridors, rubbing at the walls in a desperate search for her mirrors, which were lost, along with her beauty. Cove Heritage Centre. We now find ourselves in the town of Cove, and our first location here is the Cove Heritage Centre, which opened in 1993, situated inside a beautifully restored Victorian railway station. This is a must-visit location for anyone wanting to know more about the history of Cork. The centre tells a story of Irish emigration, with its Queenstown Story Exhibition. This exhibition traced the history of Irish emigration. Cove, formerly known as Queenstown, was a pivotal port from which 3 million Irish people embarked on their journeys. From the 1600s onwards, transportation of British overseas colonies was common, leading to destinations like Virginia, New England, Barbados, Jamaica, and Montserrat. You can also learn all about Annie Moore, the first emigrant ever to be processed at Ellis Island in New York on the 1st of January 1892. The statue of Annie Moore and her two brothers is located directly outside of Cove Heritage Centre. The centre also sheds light on the transportation of convicts to Australia and the connection between Cove and two major shipping disasters, the Lusitania and, of course, the Titanic. The Titanic's final stop for passengers was at Queenstown at Cove on the 11th of April 1912, where 123 passengers boarded rowing boats to the cruise liner from the wooden pier that remains to this day. They all had dreams of beginning a new life in America. 113 of them were third class, 7 were second class, and only 3 were in first class. 4 days later, the Titanic struck an iceberg, and of the 2,240 passengers and crew on board, only 706 people survived the Titanic. Of the 123 that boarded at Cove, just 44 survived. When the Heritage Centre was being built in the early 90s, the worksite was plagued by poltergeist activity, and two workmen arrived to continue work, only to find their tools, which had been carefully put away, scattered all over a room. Later, a shop experienced a large piece of crystal being taken down from a shelf and carefully placed in the middle of the floor. On the wooden pier behind the Heritage Centre, the very pier that those 123 passengers walked along before boarding the ill-fated Titanic 112 years ago, a young woman wearing a red cape has been seen staring out to sea. What makes her presence even more alarming for those who have witnessed her is that she's floating above the ground. The Commodore Hotel. Originally known as the Queen's Hotel, the Commodore Hotel in Cove was one of Ireland's first purpose-built hotels, opening its doors in 1854. Now in its 170th year of operation, The three-star hotel is undergoing a €2 million refurbishment programme, with the historic establishment aiming to become a four-star hotel. Talking of stars, anyone opting to stay there may well bump into one of the Commodore's repeat customers, as Hollywood legend Paul Rudd, that's right, Ant-Man himself, stays at the hotel whenever he's in town, as his father used to come to Cove for fishing. It's undeniable that this establishment has weathered through significant local, national and international upheavals, even playing a role in a pivotal historic event. On the fateful day of May the 7th, 1915, tragedy struck as the British vessel RMS Lusitania fell victim to a German U-boat's torpedo off the Irish coast near Cork. The aftermath claimed the lives of 1,198 passengers and crew, and many survivors found refuge and solace within the walls of this very hotel. It transformed into a makeshift sanctuary, hosting both the wounded and the deceased, with a makeshift hospital and morgue hastily established to tend to the victims. At that time, the hotel was under the ownership of Otto Humbert, a German national, who, fearing retaliation, sought shelter in the hotel's basement with his family. Legend has it that the echoes of this tragic event linger within the hotel's confines. Whispers of unexplained noises permeate the corridors, with some guests reporting an eerie chill that seems to seep through certain areas. Local lore spins tales of a tormented British soldier whose spirit is said to haunt this premises, while the most prevalent tale tells of a spectral infant's cries echoing through the upper floors. Stories of a deceased baby found in a suitcase, hidden in a cupboard, persist through the years, although there is no historical evidence to back up this horrendous tale. A quick look at the Commodore Hotel's reviews on TripAdvisor adds some credence to the long-held belief that this hotel is haunted. A review from 2015 reads, "Most certainly haunted. Myself and my family stayed here in July 2015. During the night, I began to hear the sound of a child or toddler crying in the room next to us, and the more I focused on the crying, the louder it got, until it reached a point where my ears began to ring violently and I started to feel dizzy. The crying was extremely loud and sounded like it was coming from all angles. After being in touch with paranormal investigators, I have now discovered that I am not the only one to have experienced this. If you like a good night's sleep, avoid the top floor here." In a review from January 2020 states, "The staff were very friendly and the hotel was comfortable. We stayed on the third floor for 2 nights, and the day we checked out, my friend said that she woke up several times because somebody was walking in the room above us with loud, heavy shoes. It turned out that there wasn't a room above us, and we learned that a soldier had killed himself in the hotel. My husband and I were in a different room, and we both heard heavy things being moved around during the night. After talking to Pat, who was a tourist guide, it turned out that after the sinking of the Lusitania, the hotel was turned into a hospital and a morgue for the wounded and the dead. So it could have just been the spirits moving the beds around. I would definitely stay here again, just for the ghostly experiences." The Cathedral Church of St. Colman. The Cathedral Church of St. Colman, also known as Cove Cathedral, or formerly Queenstown Cathedral, stands tall in Cove. It's a Roman Catholic cathedral that was finished in 1919. Situated on Cathedral Place, it commands a view of Cork's harbour and is dedicated to Colman of Cloyne, the patron saint of the Diocese of Cloyne. It's the main cathedral of the diocese. Construction started in 1868, but it took over 50 years to finish due to cost increases and plan changes. Its steeple reaches 91.4 metres, which is 300 feet, making it the tallest church in all of Ireland. Many also consider it to be one of the most beautiful church buildings in Ireland. Underneath St. Colman's Cathedral, the crypts once served as a prison, where many young, starving children were locked up for stealing food. Historians local to the area claim that underground, beneath this most holy of places, remain iron shackles attached to the walls, with the bones of those who wasted away to nothing there still present, attached to the shackles that held them until the end of their days. Even though the prison closed in 1895, many believe that the spirits of these children remain here, imprisoned here in death, just as they were in life. The best known legend connected to the cathedral is the local belief that a massive black spectral hound roams the ground at St. Colman's. Harbour Row. Our next story dates back to 1942 and occurred in Harbour Row in Cove. the street named, as you can probably guess, because it's located right on the harbour. A man by the name of Bernie Doll was walking home when he suddenly noticed a man walking towards him. Before he could move to one side to let the man pass, the man, seemingly unaware of Bernie, walked straight through him. Bernie turned around and saw the man walk on and eventually vanish from sight. He was extremely shaken by the experience and he told his friends and family of what had happened. Incredibly, 10 years after his encounter, repairs were being carried out on the road in Harbour Row, and the skeleton of a man was found. His identity was never established, but the spot it was found was exactly where Bernie had had his terrifying encounter. Spike Island. Spike Island stands as a renowned tourist destination just off the coast of Cork, accessible by boat from Cove. Spanning 103 acres, its history is as diverse as its haunting. Originally serving as a monastery and later transformed into a fort, the island took on a more sinister role when it opened as a prison in 1847. Life within its walls were marked by unimaginable hardship, with overcrowded cells and backbreaking labour becoming the norm. The echoes of violence, despair and isolation permeate Spike Island's storied past. It's no surprise that many sought to escape what they termed as hell, either through desperate attempts or by tragically taking their own lives. Yet one can't help but wonder if their spirits still linger, unable to find peace. Legends speak of multiple hauntings that plague Spike Island. Among them, the chilling tales of a spectre with eyes as dark as the abyss, which has terrorised countless souls. Soldiers unfortunate enough to witness it, in vain attempts have even fired upon the ominous figure. Others speak of encountering a spectral mist. This is attributed to the ghost of former prisoner John Mitchell. John Mitchell was born in 1815, and as a young adult, he emerged as a prominent figure in both the Young Islander and the Irish Confederation movements. Holding occupation as a solicitor, an Irish nationalist activist and a political journalist, he vocally opposed British rule in Ireland, particularly condemning the government's inadequate response to the Irish famine. In the turbulent 1840s, Ireland seethed with discontent, poised for rebellion, and Britain feared that the influential Mitchell could ignite revolutionary fervour. Launching his own Republican newspaper, The United Irishman, Mitchell garnered immense popularity. In an attempt to quash Mitchell's influence and prevent him from becoming a martyr, the British government passed the 1848 Treason Felony Act, treating treason as a common crime. Consequently, Mitchell was arrested, tried, and sentenced to 14 years transportation on May the 27th, 1848. Under military escort, Mitchell was transferred to Spike Island on HMS Scourge, where he spent 3 days, before being transported to Bermuda and eventually Australia in 1850. During his arduous journey, he commenced writing his renowned Jail Journal, or 5 Years in British Prisons, which chronicled his experiences from Dublin through Spike Island until his arrival in New York on November the 29th, 1853. Published in New York in 1854, his journal captivated readers, shedding light on the appalling conditions endured by prisoners on Spike Island, despite purported reforms within the Victorian penal system. Its publication sparked significant public outcry and shed light on the darker aspects of prison life, contributing to the ongoing debates around prison reform. On Spike Island, there are regular reports of a uniformed man near a fireplace and a ghostly lady in white wandering the grounds. In the 1980s, naval cadets stationed here reported disturbances, while inmates lamented encounters with a sinister black entity that haunted their cells at night. Once dubbed Ireland's answer to Alcatraz, Spike Island was a place of dread for any man who dared set foot upon its shores. Prisoners endured deplorable conditions, with overcrowded cells of up to 11 or 12 inmates, malnutrition, and disease was rampant. For those deemed disobedient, solitary confinement, ominously referred to as the Punishment Block, or Ireland's Hell, awaited. Shackled to walls and forced to sleep on cold, damp floors, it was a punishment that stripped away any semblance of humanity. The island itself holds the remains of approximately 1,000 souls, with 900 laid to rest in a mass grave, their final resting place. Yet it's said that many of these restless spirits still roam the halls, their presence a chilling reminder of the island's dark and troublesome past. In 2018, a photograph, that you can see over on the Instagram at How Haunted Pod was taken by a visitor on an after-hours tour. This photo captured the attention of the media, and at Halloween the Irish Examiner ran a story with the headline, "Ghostly Goings On at Cork's Spike Island." It continues, "Do you believe in ghosts? It may be time to reconsider." One picture taken by a visitor to Cork's Spike Island this weekend may even have the most sceptical amongst us reconsider their beliefs. Louise Bunyan is the woman behind the spooky snap, which was taken on Sunday the 28th of October in the abandoned jail section of the prison, a block which has held prisoners in the 1840s, 1920s and the 1990s. Louise was enjoying an after-hours tour of the former island prison and fortress, and as she went to snap an image of the empty cell block, she was surprised to see her camera's facial recognition feature activate. Further brightening of the image reveals the distinguishable shape of a man, seemingly carrying something across the hall. Spike Island commented that their after-dark tours focus on the real history of the inmates, who inhabited the prison, but visitor sightings of ghosts are not uncommon. Other photographs taken since the prison reopened as a visitor attraction in 2016 seem to show inexplicable shapes, unusual fogs, and other unnatural phenomena. This is on an island where bodies lie buried in mass graves, victims of an overcrowded, famine-era prison that held 2,300 inmates. Research undertaken by the island's heritage team have uncovered several stories of ghostly reports, including soldiers firing at seemingly phantom intruders. Irish naval cadets stationed on the island in the 1980s reported strange occurrences disturbing their accommodation. Prison guards from the 1980s also reported prisoners used to complain of a black entity visiting their cell after dark. This entity may have been captured in a 2016 photo by photographer Shea Wolfe, who was in an empty cell in the same block where the recent image was captured. Charles Fort. Our ghost trail has led us to the medieval fishing port of Kinsale, situated on the mouth of the River Bandon. This charming tourist village boasts a diverse history and is characterised by its maze-like network of narrow streets, nestled snugly between the hills and the shoreline. And it is here we find Charles Fort, standing proudly as a trace Italian fortification. Characterised by its bastion design with one section of the outer wall built in a star fashion. Situated at the southern end of the village of Summer Cove, overlooking Kinsale Harbour. It holds a rich history dating back to its completion in 1682. It is often referred to as the New Fort, in contrast to the older James Fort, on the opposite side of Kinsale Harbour. Constructed atop the ruins of an earlier Barryog castle at Rincorin, which played a significant role during the Siege of Kinsale in 1601, Charles Fort bears the name of Charles II, and it was designed by the esteemed Surveyor General Sir William Robinson, with contributions from engineer Captain Thomas Phillips. The fort's construction spanned from 1677 to 1682, incorporating features of star fortifications aimed at withstanding cannon attacks. Initially serving as a British Army barracks for over two centuries, Charles Fort saw its military significance decline following the Anglo-Irish Treaty of 1921. Its abandonment came abruptly during the Irish Civil War in 1922. This was when anti-treaty forces set fire to the complex. Despite years of neglect, Charles Fort gained recognition as a National Monument of Ireland in 1971, leading to restoration attempts. The Office of Public Works later assumed responsibility for its restoration and development, transforming parts of the fort into an exhibition space within the former commander's quarters. Today, Charles Fort welcomes visitors year-round, offering insights into its storied past and providing an opportunity to explore its historic grounds. For the adventurous, there's even a ghost walk available for those brave enough to find out more about the phantoms who remain here in this 17th century fort, and perhaps even encounter the infamous White Lady for themselves. During the time when a man called Warrender served as the fort's commander, his daughter led a life of privilege within the garrison walls, rarely venturing beyond its confines. It was here that she captured the heart of a young officer stationed at the barracks, leading to a whirlwind romance and eventual marriage. On their wedding day amid the festivities, the couple took a leisurely stroll along the parapets of the fort, and she was distracted by a single white flower grown below. An eager young sentry stated that he would climb down the ramparts and fetch the flower as a wedding gift, if her officer husband would mind his post. Trusting her husband to stand watch, she consented, unaware of the tragedy that would unfold. As the night wore on and the sentry failed to return, the groom, exhausted from the day's events, nodded off while leaning on his musket. In a cruel twist of fate, the commander, conducting his rounds, mistook the sleeping soldier for a dereliction of duty and fired, only to realise too late that he had just killed his new son-in-law. Consumed by remorse and unable to face his daughter's anguish, the commander took his own life by throwing himself from the battlements. Upon awakening and discovering her husband's lifeless body, the young bride, overwhelmed with grief, followed suit, plunging to her death from the ramparts. Since that tragic night, the ghostly figure of the Lady in White, adorned in her wedding gown, roams the parapets of Charles Fort. Her presence, haunting and sorrowful, strikes fear into the hearts of those who encounter her. Even the most hardened soldiers, in a futile attempt to keep her at bay, would lock the doors at night, but to no avail. For the grief-stricken widow, who lost both her beloved husband and her father in one fateful moment, there is no rest. Her spirits remain trapped within the walls of the fort, forever condemned to wander in search of the love that she lost that day. Is this merely a legend, or could there be some substance to the legend of the White Lady of Charles Fort? A TripAdvisor review left in July of 2017 may have the answer. Somebody called Mike M. from Lancaster said in his review entitled, "Really amazing fort in great shape for its age. If you are planning to go, ask one of the guides to look at the picture of the governor's house with the ghost in the window. A visitor took a lot of pictures and then saw a woman's image in the window which is 2 stories tall. They will also tell you about one of the guides trying to take pictures shortly after they were sent the ghost photograph, and the guide's camera stopped working when they got to the governor's house. Little odd, but wild when you see and hear about it from the experts." Drombeg Stone Circle. The final stop on our epic ghost trail of County Cork is the oldest place we've visited, by far. Drombeg Stone Circle, also known as the Druid's Altar, lies 1.5 miles, or 2.5 kilometres, east of the village of Glandore. It is one of Ireland's most frequented megalithic sites, and enjoys protection under the National Monuments Act. Originally comprising of 17 closely spaced stones, Drombeg now retains 13. Crafted from local sandstone, these stones form a circle spanning 9.3 metres in diameter. The circles follow the axial, or Cork-Kerry style, featuring 2 taller entrance stones opposite a recumbent axial stone, all oriented southwest towards the setting sun. Notably, the recumbent stone displays 2 egg-shaped cut marks. Surrounding the circle around 40 metres to the west, stand 2 round stone-walled prehistoric huts and a Bronze Age burned mound. Evidence suggests that this burned mound was in use until the 5th century. The larger hut, supported by timber posts, once boasted a timber roof, while the smaller one reveals remnants of a cooking spot. Excavated and restored in 1957, following early 1900s surveys, radiocarbon dating places Drombeg's construction between 1100 and 800 BC. Within the circle, an inverted pot containing cremated remains of a young adolescent was discovered, alongside shattered shards and pious sweepings. Notably, carvings on one stone suggest prehistoric petroglyphs, with one resembling an erect phallus with 2 testicles and the other a vulvar outline. Legend has it that the Drombeg Stone Circle is haunted by the spirit of a pregnant woman who, consumed by an obsession with the stones, tragically took her own life just weeks before her expected delivery. Additionally, there are tales suggesting that human sacrifices once occurred within the circle, particularly on the rock known as the Druid's Altar. It's believed that the lingering souls of those sacrificed still haunt the site to this day. Archaeologist Boyle Somerville visited the circle in September 1935, accompanied by Geraldine Cumming, a psychic medium. In his 1995 book, A Guide to Stone Circles of Britain, Ireland and Brittany, fellow archaeologist Aubrey Burl told of what happened on that September day 60 years earlier. He wrote, "She did not like the place. She felt it was a place where animals, if not small children, were sacrificed at each winter solstice. She saw a priest in blue and saffron robes standing at the altar of the recumbent, about to kill his human offering. Drombeg Stone Circle was cursed. It was guarded by spirits of darkness." Mm-hmm. You can follow How Haunted on Twitter at @HowHauntedPod or over on Instagram at @HowHauntedPod, where you will see photos galore relating to our ghost trail of County Cork. If you want to get in touch, you can do so by visiting the website at www.how-haunted.com or you can email me at rob@how-haunted.com. If you'd like to support the show, you could sign up to one of three Patreon tiers. They start at as little as £1. You can get early ad-free access to episodes and a monthly bonus episode where I conduct a paranormal investigation, talking you through the history, the ghost stories, and what happened on the night itself. This is interspersed with audio from the ghost hunt. What's more, there's a free 7-day trial to the £3 tier, so you could get access right now to March's special episode, which sees you join me at the Lytton Phil in Newcastle upon Tyne. Then there are all of the other exclusive episodes, which include the big Halloween special at the Golden Fleece in York, Dalhousie Castle Hotel, the York Dungeon, Bedlam Theatre, Kielder Castle, the Dean Court Hotel, and the 48 hours I spent in the company of a haunted doll. You can also get yourself some exclusive How Haunted merch, including a mug and a t-shirt. Find out more by going to patreon.com/howhauntedpod. If you'd like to support the show but you aren't a fan of Patreon, why not donate a couple of pounds to help with the admin side of the podcast? You can do this at buymeacoffee.com/howhauntedpod. All the information and links are in the podcast episode description. If you've enjoyed this episode, then please consider leaving a review on your podcast provider of choice. It really does help other people to find How Haunted. Next time out, we're doing something a little different, as you will join me on location, as I record from the site of the bloodiest battle in the history of England. Around 14,000 men were killed right there in a few short hours. This included the King of Scotland, who was the last monarch to be killed in battle in Britain. Ever since, ghostly replays of the battle have been reported, so who knows what I'll experience when I record the episode from the battlefield. Let's find out together next episode, when together we ask, just how haunted is Flodden Field? Thank you so much for accompanying me for our paranormal adventures once again. Stay safe, and join me next time, when we will once again ask the question, how haunted?